Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Come on, 14-year-old Greg shouted to his pal Dean. If we're going to make this work, we've got to get everyone to help. Okay. Dean grabbed a couple of heavy boxes, piled one on the other, and began lugging them from the driveway to the school's entrance. Hey, Carl arrived to help. Where do you want this stuff?
Just put the boxes in rows in the gym, Greg replied. Then when it's all inside, we can sort the stuff.
How are you boys doing? Mr. Sims, the principal, walked by.
I'm so impressed with your project, Greg. Needy kids will be delighted with all this sports equipment.
Thanks, Mr. Sims, replied Greg from behind a pile of boxes. I sure hope so.
Mr. Sims stopped and cocked his head.
Can't say as I remember ever having a drive like this before. Whose idea was this?
It was mine, sir, Greg stood up. I just wanted to do something to help out.
From a parent's perspective, how can we develop children to be self-starters? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has worked with children and their families as a psychotherapist and specialist in child development in the Washington, D.C. area for almost 30 years. Lethea West also works as a counselor at Greenacres School in Rockville, Maryland. She has coached a countless number of parents through their children's expected developmental stages, as well as through difficult challenges that accompany childhood. Lethea and her husband have raised a 25-year-old son who's working on a doctorate in psychology and a 22-year-old daughter who is in law school. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Lethea.
Thank you so much for having me.
What characterizes kids we'd label as self-starters or independent learners?
The very definition of a person who is a self-starter is one who takes initiative. An autonomous learner, these folks tend to be rather self-disciplined or what we call self-regulated. There's just an energy about them, an enthusiasm for learning. A very wise middle school head who I know calls these kids directed. I love that term, love that way. They're just very purposeful in the way they approach life. They seem to know what they want. They go for what they want. They do it on their own with of course, some guidance. And there just seems to be a tenacity, an ability that no one tells them about. It's just to stick to it. Stick to it through challenges even. And most of all, there just seems to be a strong sense of self, you know, that people seem to pick up on.
So there's no reluctance to just forge ahead with new ideas.
Can't say there isn't a reluctance. Sometimes there is a reluctance. Sometimes there's some questioning. But they forge on anyway. And they have the tenacity to do so and are willing to take the risk.
In this age of increasingly complex skills to master, why do you think it's advantageous to be an independent learner? We're sort of talking a lot of times about cooperating and going with the group and so forth, but this is a little different.
Research will show you, and we just know from people we know just walking around, you know, that there's lots of good reasons and benefits from being a self-starter or an independent learner. Clearly, if you have more input into your own learning, there's more meaning to it. If you have any control over it at all, even if it's going into the sandbox and putting your own sand in, that all of a sudden that sandbox is more special. You know, so learning that we have input into, it sticks longer and there's a spark to learn more. There's just an eagerness to apply that knowledge as time goes on, and it's just more fun.
It's interesting. We had heard somebody who did compiling educational research talk about the significance of letting kids sort of start a project and then figure out why the skills they would need to get to do that project would be important as a way of sort of getting kids into something and making them have the impetus for doing it themselves.
It's exactly the kind of input I'm talking about, that they take responsibility for their own learning. It just has more meaning. It's connected to real life situations. And the meaning and the knowledge just takes hold so much easier, and it just stays with them so much more than just rote learning.
It's sort of like watching toddlers, I guess, on a playground, because they're really, in a sense, they're all self-starters at that age,
yes,
right? Because
yes.
they're figuring out what they want to do and how they want to do it, and they stick with it. And whatever the concepts that they get from doing that seem to stay with them. And
then if we could all just stay there.
Well, it sounds like these are such desirable traits to keep. How can a parent foster a child who's a self-starter?
Well, the secret is that the child must be trusting enough and comfortable enough and confident enough to take the risk of learning something new, knowing that it's okay to make a mistake. That's a secret. Now it's out.
So parents and teachers really need to forge an atmosphere, an environment that enables a child to feel that mistakes are something that happen and that you can build on them and so forth.
That's right. That's done through the relationship. It really is.
We had a wonderful preschool teacher who came on to talk about early childhood environments and mistakes. And she said what she used to do was the very first day of preschool, when the kids were having snack, she waited till everybody had their cup of juice and their cookie and whatever it was, and she would knock over the juice. And she would watch, you know, everyone caught their breath. She said, "Oh, I spilled my juice. Oh, well, I guess I'll just wipe it up." And she said she could see everybody exhale. You know, it was just terrific that they could understand that it was an environment where it was okay to make a mistake.
And encouraging mistakes, truly, in order to have the lesson or the practice of making a mistake, knowing, oh, that turned out okay after all. It really wasn't the end of the world. And going forward anyway is a really, really valuable experience. One of the big things parents can concretely do is truly taking a genuine interest in your child's interests. One way to do that is by consciously entering your child's world. We require children to enter the adult world all the time. We have to go shopping. Time to go to the store. We were having company tonight, so I have to do this, so that means you have to do that. I mean, there's this all day. Sometimes children are required to enter our world. So it's important for us to consciously enter their world sometimes. There's a really great technique developed by a guy named Stanley Greenspan. It's called floor time. And this is what you do. You sit on the floor and you play with your child. It's fun. So you sit and you choose a time that's uninterrupted. No cooking dinner, no answering the phone, no TV. It's just you and your child. And it's playtime. Whatever your child wants to play, you play. The important thing is that you follow his or her lead. So, for example, if your child wants to play with every fire truck in the room, he gathers them up. You help him gather them up because he's doing that first. And he says, "I'll be the fire chief." And you say, "Okay, I'll be the helper." And then you follow. This gives your child the practice, again, to take the lead, to understand that you're very interested in what he or she wants to do, and that that's important. Besides that, it's fun.
Well, I think it gets harder as they get older and they have interests that we either don't share or don't understand. Then comes the trick of trying to support that.
True, but by then, it's done. You've already made your mark.
Okay.
We hope.
We don't have to
There's
go find...
There's still things to do.
Okay. We don't have to go find places where there are fencing lessons. And
actually, we did have a self-starter for whom we did have to find fencing lessons and eventually even a public fencing club, which was at that time mostly for adults. We had one son who played a variety of sports and came up with wanting to fence, and there was no fencing at his school, but we found it in the community, and then we had to find a club where he could use the new skills, not to mention the new equipment.
Not at home with his brothers.
Not
however.
At home with his brothers, and we managed to work that out. And this same child was the one in our family who loved jumping in with ideas for his younger brother's birthday parties. He was the coach in many ways for different kinds of games that he would come up with. One time I remember he created a beanbag board. I don't even remember what the pictures were he painted on it, but he made holes. Maybe my husband helped him make holes and got together beanbags, and all the children were in a contest tossing the beanbags through the holes. And this was the kind of thing he did at all his little brother's birthday parties.
And then he grew up to be the kind of fellow who even in college was somebody people could count on.
Doing all kinds of creative things in college. And he did coach children in the community near his university in sports. And he did develop a number of interesting projects on his own in college and in medical school.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on raising self-starters.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Lethia West about raising self-starters.
Are there other ideas you have for parents helping kids to be self-starters?
Indeed. Well, it's important to start with your individual child's personality or temperament. You start there. And you give choices about things to do within a framework. This is a really important thing to keep in mind. To give a child choices, not extremely open-ended, but if you're cooking, for example, or you're busy, saying, find something to do is so open-ended that often causes children just to spin. They can't figure out what in the world to do. So another way to handle that is, I'm really busy right now. Can you find something to do, such as there's blocks, there's Legos, or you could draw? So giving two or three or four choices, three is a good number, is a good way to help the child feel in control in a safe environment and make a choice that's constructive. And then after a while, the child just starts making those choices all on their own.
Now, it's interesting, the three choices that you used as examples were open-ended kind of toys. It wasn't go play a video game or go play this toy that has batteries and lights and everything. You want to explain that a little bit?
Hands-on materials that involve the mind and the body are an awfully good idea. High-tech toys are okay for a few minutes. At screen time, only recommend that for 15 or 30 minutes a day tops.
And that's for kids over what age?
Any age.
Well, but
you know,
two,
for
three.
High school, of course, then we're different. We're talking about homework on the computer, et cetera, or even middle school. I mean, homework is a different story. But yes, two or three, 10 minutes screen time in terms of computer kinds of things. But TV, 30 minutes tops. Another thing parents can do is to be sure to encourage a sense of competence and set the child up for success early. And that's done in very simple ways. Please help me set the table. Would you please put this flower pot on the desk? Things that you know the child can do that makes him or her feel, I did that. And that feeling of I did that creates competence, which always makes someone want to learn more. There's an excitement that happens there. And understand that focusing on the effort to try hard is the important thing. It's not the success or failure of the task. It's really the effort that continues to grow the child's confidence. Providing a range of opportunities for exploration is great for the whole family, and that would be going to museums, exhibits, concerts, providing classes to develop talents. A word of warning to the wise, however, take stock of your child's individual personality and start there, because achievement should match your child's abilities. High expectations can be stressful to children and to parents, so it's really important to focus on the effort. Another word of warning, be careful not to impose your own dreams onto the child. If you wanted to be a ballerina, and maybe were one a little bit, but you see another chance for your daughter to be a prima ballerina, watch out. And careful that activity should be balanced with downtime. Developing talents is something we all want to do as parents for our children, but overextension and overexposure with no rest can be really very stressful to all of us, parents and children alike, and it really can undermine the very thing we're trying to promote. And showing interest and being intrusive are vastly different things, so we have to be aware. Am I really being overly involved? Careful.
Now, what about in a classroom? How can a teacher pick out a self-starter?
I consulted some of my favorite teacher friends about this, and I'd like to quote her if I could. Mm-hmm. She said, "Well, I believe every student has the capacity to be a self-starter, an independent learner. Some across the board, and some in specific curriculum areas, and others during specific projects or activities. It's my job to find the spark to ignite that." And she went on to give me a great example of one of her students, who we'll call Rob. Her class went on an overnight trip, and one of the activities was a challenge obstacle course. The specific task was the whole group had to get over a tall wall. All of them had to get over the wall. And they thought and they thought and they figured, how in the world? The wall was much taller than any of them, being fourth graders. And Rob had an idea. He got everybody's attention, and he said his idea of how the whole team could get over through mutual support. And with that effort and that idea, everyone got over the wall, and they all cheered on for each of their successes. And Rob was rewarded at the end with comments like, "Wow, we couldn't have done that without you, buddy." And that was really just terrific for him. He wasn't necessarily the greatest academic achiever, but he was an idea maker for sure.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on raising self-starters.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Lethea West about raising self-starters. As a parent, what advantages have you seen for children who are independent learners?
Well, I am a lucky lady. I have two wonderful children who have shown me lots of examples of this. My son, who's 25, when he was a little boy, showed great interest in soccer. It was his passion for sure. And grew a little older, became a camp counselor, loved teaching children soccer, and really showed a talent for working with children. He went to college, and in one of his extracurricular activities in college, initiated an after-school group for kids. That blossomed into further interest in working with children, went on to get a master's degree in child development, and now he's in a doctoral program in psychology.
Never know where soccer will take you.
There you go. That's right.
Does he still play soccer?
He does. He does. I'd like to give another example. My daughter was shopping with me during her high school senior year. We were shopping for a prom dress, and suddenly she stopped in the middle of the racks and racks of gowns, tulle and sequins and such, just stopped in her tracks and said, "What in the world are the girls in New Orleans going to do about their prom?" It happened to be a few months after Hurricane Katrina. She could not take another step. She could not make a move toward the counter to buy her own dress without having hatched a plan to help the girls in New Orleans have a prom of their own. The plan was hatched right there among the dresses. She decided she would send a few dresses of her own, call some of her friends, email everyone she knew. She came up with a flyer, which went viral, as we call it these days, and went all over the country. And before we knew it, we had that year, we had 2,800 prom dresses at our house.
Oh, jeepers.
How did she find out what to do with them, where to send them?
Oh, my goodness. Well, the original plan was to send 10 dresses, and then before the first day we had 100. So the plan went quickly. Although she initiated this, she needed a lot of help from lots of people, which she was happy to elicit. So we had lots of neighbors and friends and family come help us sort the dresses, and she found one school, which turned into 10 schools that year. And in the end, she's ended up with having been responsible for 6,000 dresses, having gone to the Gulf Coast.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that terrific? Well, are there environments or experiences that particularly foster independent learning skills, have you found?
Any hands-on activity that accompanies learning is effective, truly. Again, it's a way to make learning more meaningful. Exposure to a wide variety of things makes learning more real and it's easier to comprehend. For example, a child who's been to the ocean makes learning about the ocean at school at a later date just so much more meaningful and more fun. It's a point of reference. So anything you can do to create a point of reference, such as museums or monuments or classes in a certain talent.
Or taking your kids out to the park or anything where they can learn to be around.
One of the most important ways is continuing to read to your child every day, long, long, long after he's able to read on his own. Doing this is a proven way to build a warm relationship, which I said is really the key to the whole thing. It also models the importance of reading for pleasure, reading for information, and it expands the child's knowledge base as well as language skills. And it's also just a lovely time for expression of thoughts and feelings through reflection of stories. And most importantly, it's a time just to snuggle and feel good about being together.
Lethea, how do kids who are independent learners or self-starters fare as they mature?
Well, possessing these skills, it is a skill set. Possessing these skills benefits anyone and becomes refined with practice. The more things you can do to get the child to practice, the better, for sure. And as the child matures, even all the way into adulthood, the people are able to organize their thoughts and initiate ideas, which, of course, comes way in handy for the workplace, for school, for raising a family, for anything. They're better able to initiate ideas. Again, comes in handy. They're better able to make connections between concepts and make conclusions and decisions, as well as apply information. Now, these kids are often self-disciplined, and that does help people become more organized in their workspace. Again, you can see how that just, as people mature into adulthood, that would come in handy. Like manage time, use resources well, and work through distractions. And also to make plans and follow through on plans. There are some famous self-starters who we all know. They're adults now, but I can just imagine what they were like as children. For, let's say, Bill Gates, for example. Big self-starter there. And This young fella, Mark Zuckerman, the one who invented Facebook. I mean, he's still a young guy, but can you imagine what he was like as a child? And then, of course, there's Maya Angelou, who really did persevere through some big challenges to reach her dreams.
What resources would you suggest for listeners who want to further pursue some of these issues?
There are some really good books out there that parents can use as references. One of them is Touch Points by T. Barry Brazelton, Multiple Intelligences by Howard Gardner, Playground Politics by Stanley Greenspan, Blessing of a Skinned Knee, Wendy Mogul, Your Child's Strengths by Jennifer Fox.
Well, this has been a wonderful time of lots of learning for both of us and our listeners at home. So, Lethea West, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so, so much for having me here. It's been a lot of fun.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 457 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or organizations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective. Parents' Perspective Incorporated is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect or iGive.com or MissionFish at eBay. Or you can send checks or money orders to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.